Thank you, Professor Zuckernagel and Professor Surhausen and the members of the prize committee and all the guests here tonight. I've met a lot of wonderful people in my brief visit to Frankfurt, and I'm truly honored to be in this historic and beautiful hall tonight. I'm very honored, indeed honored, to receive the Paul Ehrlich and Ludwig Darmstadter Prize from the Paul Ehrlich Foundation, and really humbled to be selected to join such an illustrious group of people who've won this prize before me. And I pledge that I'm going to continue my efforts to try to justify the honor that this has been bestowed upon me. I think in a way, and I think you've heard this several times, I think the award of this prize this year to myself and Dr. June recognizes not just our own achievements in science, but also recognition of the fact that the field of immunotherapy for treating cancer has finally come of age, and it's particularly appropriate to happen in the Paul Ehrlich Prize, because as you heard, Paul Ehrlich was the first probably to have the idea that the immune system could be used to attack cancer in the form of magic bullets of antibodies against tumor cells. And I'm going to talk about how we've accomplished that in a slightly different way than Dr. Ehrlich would have proposed, I think. Although there have been many peaks and valleys in the field of cancer immunotherapy over the years, recent advances in our knowledge of the fundamental mechanisms of cellular immunity have led us to develop new strategies for manipulating the immune system to treat cancer. Both Dr. June and I have developed ways to use T cells, which are the warriors of the immune system, to treat cancer, although we've done it in very different ways, as you will hear. But I'd just like to point out that T cells offer three unique features of treating cancer that no other modality of cancer therapy can offer. The first is their specificity. As Dr. Zinkernagel showed years ago, T cells recognize peptides in the context of MHC molecules on the surface of cells and tell the immune system everything that's going on in that cell, whether it's infected with a virus or has, as we know now, mutations, new peptides generated by mutations which cause cancer. And so looked at that way, T cells actually recognize the carcinogenesis process itself and can attack that by going after the products of the carcinogenesis process, whether they cause cancer or not. The second thing is adaptability. I think, my German isn't that good, but Dr. Zuckernagel told you that there's 100 million to 1,000 million different T cells that have specificities to recognize different things. That's an enormous specificity and can take care of the variability that occurs in tumor cells as they shift and change to avoid the onslaught of therapeutics that are designed to attack single targets. And finally, there's the feature of memory. Once you've got T cells, there's a residual population of self-renewing T cells that have a lot of stem cell-like properties that are with you for the rest of your life and can reawaken and attack the cancer if it recurs. In my case, the strategy for cancer research really emerged from fundamental research that led to us to an understanding of the complexity of the regulation of T cell responses. And of course, initiation of a T cell response involves recognition of that peptide in the context of MHC by the T-cell antigen receptor. This is much like recognition of a key in the ignition switch of a car. But we learned by the late 1980s that wasn't enough to get the car moving. There's another molecule involved that we showed in the late 1980s was a molecule called CD28 that gives another signal called a co-stimulatory signal. It serves as the gas pedal and really gets the whole immune system started. It leads T cells to develop rapidly, acquire their function, or form that army that goes through the body and destroys virus-infected cells or cancer cells or whatever. But by the mid-1990s, my lab and Jeff Bluestone showed that it was actually a lot more complex than that. That there was another molecule called CTLA-4, which actually binds to the same molecules at CD28, and was initially thought to be another co-stimulatory molecule. In fact, there were a lot of papers published on that when Jeff and I began to say, no, that's not correct. It's actually an inhibitory molecule, and the reason you think it's another co-stimulatory molecule is you're removing the brakes. And we developed a lot of data showing that actually CTLA-4 is a molecule that stops the immune response. and keeps it, I began to realize, could serve as a break which would terminate immune responses before the immune system had a chance to actively eliminate especially large tumor masses and completely eliminate tumors. So our proposal that you could block CTLA-4 as a strategy for cancer therapy was radical in two ways. First of all, the magic bullet proposed by Dr. Ehrlich was directed towards the cancer cell. Our magic bullet is not directed towards the cancer cell, but against the immune system itself, against CTLA-4, this molecule that's the brakes, and allows us to just keep the immune system going as long as we want to. And the second departure, and since it does that, since it's aimed at the immune system, the tumor doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what kind of tumor it is. The immune system doesn't know the mutation that causes the cancer, doesn't know if it's a lung cancer or a kidney cancer or melanoma or anything else. It just knows it's cancer. That being the case, we felt that this approach could be a strategy for treating any kind of cancer. Again, we're treating cancer by ignoring it and arming the immune system. The second departure was that we're not trying to harness the immune system by immunize to get it to go and attack any particular thing. We're unleashing the immune system. The T cells that have been primed by tumor cell death, we're unleashing those T cells to go again and continue working until they can eliminate tumors. And an implication of these two features of the work that we were doing was that you could use this anti-CTLA-4 approach not only as a monotherapy to treat cancer, but you could add it in combination with virtually anything that kills tumor cells, be it chemotherapy, genomically targeted agents, radiation, cryoablation, oncolytic viruses, whatever. All of those things we've done in mouse models and shown that we could make them much more effective and give those conventional therapies memory and give them the features of an immune response. And so beginning in 1996, we published a large number of papers showing that, as we predicted in preclinical mouse models, that blockade of CTLA-4 could eliminate many different kinds of tumors. The kind of tumor didn't seem to matter. We could cure lung cancer, colon cancer, kidney cancer, melanoma, if we used it in combination with other agents. We found virtually no cancer that wasn't susceptible to treatment in these preclinical studies. And so the idea that you could treat cancer by ignoring it and you didn't have to immunize to turn on the immune system targeting any particular thing was a little hard for the companies to take. And so it took quite a few years to engage a company that was willing to take a risk on such heretical ideas. But by the late 1990s, we teamed up with a small company named Medarex, which had technology. They had mice that had their immunoglobulin genes replaced with human. So we could make fully human antibodies to CTLA-4 that would not be rejected by the immune system of the patients as mouse antibodies would have been. So, and later we teamed up with Bristol-Myers Squibb to clinically develop this. In early trials with the antibody, in fact, the phase one in melanoma, there were objective responses. There was a patient that I met in 2011 that was probably the first patient, the longest living patient on ipilimumab therapy. She had metastatic melanoma. She was a tennis player in Southern California, and because of all the exposure to the sun, developed melanoma and had a lung metastasis, actually two big lung metastases, and had failed every therapy, including other immunotherapies. When her doctor, Tony Rebus, told her that there was this new drug, it had never been in people before, but he'd like to try it, she said, "Well, all I want to do is live 6 weeks or so I can see my sons graduate from high school." And so she got a single injection of the antibody. I was there in 2011, 10 years later, when she had her decade checkup to see if she was still tumor-free, and Tony introduced me to her. So that was 10 years out. Her tumors disappeared 6 months after the first injection and are actually still gone today. So she's 14 years out after being treated with this in the phase one trial, and has seen her children not only graduate from high school but also finish college, get married, and start their lives. There were also responses in many other tumor types in these early trials, including prostate cancer, kidney cancer, and bladder cancer, confirming again in human the predictions that we had made early on and the concept of this approach to therapy. And finally, in 2010, there was a large randomized placebo-controlled trial in melanoma, which showed a 4-month increase in the median survival of, again, late-stage melanoma patients with this disease. Now, that was been a enough for approval by the Food and Drug Administration because no other drug of any type had ever shown any increase in survival of metastatic melanoma patients who have a survival expectation after diagnosis of about 11 months. But the interesting thing about this was that 22% of the patients were alive at the end of the trial, which took 4.5 years. And so in 2011, this was approved by the Food and Drug Administration for the treatment of metastatic melanoma, and it's now a standard of care for that disease. But last year, there was a follow-up study of more than 5,000 melanoma patients who had received ipilimumab over the years, a 10-year follow-up that showed that 22% of the patients were alive, again, at 10 years following therapies. There's an inflection point at about two years when the survival curve goes absolutely flat and nobody dies from melanoma after that point. And so I think that we can consider a fraction of patients to have cured metastatic melanoma. Well, CTLA-4 was the first cell intrinsic inhibitory molecule or checkpoint to be identified. We know now that there are more of them. Dr. Zinkernagel mentioned PD-1, which had been discovered in 1992 by Tasku Hanjo, but its function wasn't known until the year 2000 when Arlene Sharp and Gordon Freeman at the Dana-Farber identified its ligands and repeated some of the experiments that we'd done with CTLA-4 in 1994 and showed that it was another immune checkpoint. And so it very quickly went into the clinic. And like anti-CTLA-4, it shows responses in many different kinds of cancer. Whether these are durable or not is not quite clear. But last year, there were two different anti-PD-1 antibodies that were approved by the Food and Drug Administration in the U.S. for treatment of metastatic melanoma. And 2 weeks ago, perhaps more significantly, at least in terms of the kind of cancer, one of those antibodies was also approved for the treatment of lung cancer. And so now we have 4 of these antibodies to immune checkpoints that have been approved for the treatment of human disease. Since these two molecules, CTLA-4 and PD-1, have different mechanisms of action, CTLA-4 blocks CD28-mediated co-stimulation, and PD-1 interferes with the ignition switch, if you will, not the gas pedal. We reasoned that these molecules might be additive, blocking these antibodies might be additive, and we published a series of mouse experiments showed that that was indeed true. 2 years ago, there was a trial of a combination of anti-CTLA-4 given concurrently with anti-PD-1 and metastatic melanoma, and there was objective responses in 50% of the patients, and half the patients now had responses. And a small follow-up, and I say this with some caution because it was not a randomized trial, it was a very small number of patients, but 88% of the patients were alive at 2 years after therapy. And so that's, again, a remarkable achievement and suggests that with melanoma, at least, we're making good progress that would have been completely unanticipated 5 years ago. And in the last few years, at least five additional immune checkpoints have been identified. They've emerged in preclinical or even in early clinical development. So there's a lot of work still to do with putting these molecules together. And so clearly, immune checkpoint blockade, immune therapy in the form of immune checkpoint blockade is a pillar of cancer therapy. And among the most exciting developments in the field is the beginning of development of rational combinations of checkpoint blockade, both with other checkpoints, with co-stimulatory molecules, and with conventional as well as genomically targeted therapies. And there's beginning to be combination with adoptive T-cell therapies such as those that have been developed by Dr. June. So until now, cures of metastatic disease were essentially unheard of. By engaging the immune system the ways I've described, we have a way forward that provides optimism. In the next few years, we'll see the cure of additional types of cancer. And I think it's a very exciting time to be in immunology and a very exciting time to be in cancer research as well. And in closing, I'd just like to thank generally a large number of students and trainees that have passed through my lab and done the work that led to these discoveries. I'd like to thank the clinicians who had the courage to treat patients, especially in the early phase one studies, the patients who were brave enough to take these experimental therapies, and finally my partner in life and science, Dr. Sharma, who's my inspiration in the work that we're doing going forward, working on rational basis to do these combinations. So thank you very much.